up at 6, which I have to do for my part-time job.
Love that.
Well, are we officially on the record right now?
We're on the record. You're like, I don't love waking up at 6. Would you wake up at 6 normally if you weren't?
No, never. No. Never in a million years.
Do you sleep in?
I sleep in.
How I'm a late? Runner.
I can sleep till 11.
Okay.
But like probably an average day if I didn't have to get up at 6 would be 9 a.m.
Mm-hmm. I'm so torn between like sleeping in and getting up early. Like I feel like I'll have a week where I wake up at like 6:30 or 7 and feel really productive, even though nothing really changes output wise with work. And then I'll have a week. Yeah, I just feel like an adult. Like right. I've really done something right.
Right.
And then like I just started letting my dog sleep in the bed with me. So now it's like sleep in time. So now I've been sleeping in all week and I feel like I love it, but I'm also like, am I fucking up my entire life?
I feel like that would be the reverse because she's a puppy. I feel like she'd be like tapping on you at 5 a.m.
Please don't miss Jen.
Sorry. My apologies. So he sleeps in with you.
Yeah, wow. He sleeps in with me. I think now that he is not in his crate, he's less incentivized to like get up early.
Makes sense.
So he just is like down to sleep until 9.
He wants
9.
To be with you, yeah. Sorry,
bless
sneeze.
You.
Wow.
It's okay.
So
welcome.
Thank you.
To a new episode of Babe. I'm your host, Lara Marie Shane Halls, and I'm here today with the one and only Alina Gonzalez, aka the Hyperbolist.
Yes. You said it right. Some people are like, the hyperbolist.
No. Okay, I speak English, so I know like how it's pronounced. Thanks.
Yes. Yes.
I'm really excited to have you on the pod.
Thank you. I'm thrilled to be here.
I was explaining kind of before we went on air how I like found out about your journey, which was like through, I'm sure the lots of readers know, through all this like kind of drama through your previous employer.
Yeah,
and then was alerted. I love anyone that like is babing out on the gram. And so I came to you that way, but I've stayed through it all. And now I'm just like, I'm here for the ride.
Oh my God. Thank you. That means a lot to me. I'm really excited.
I'm excited too.
So what's next? It's my first podcast, you guys.
This is your first ever podcast. No, you're
not. I'm easing in.
Yeah, you're doing good. Yeah, so wait, you're back in town. You have been on vacation, right?
Yeah, my life is kind of a vacation.
You were traveling to like
Sardinia. Okay. I was in Sardinia for 3 weeks and Paris and Amsterdam by accident because Mercury was in retrograde and my travel plans got fucked.
Ended up in Amsterdam as well.
I ended up in Amsterdam, which was amazing. I didn't do any drugs or shrooms, which I feel like I have to go back to do, but Amsterdam is amazing.
Yeah. What did you do while you were there?
Shop.
Yeah. What was your favorite place out of all those places that you went?
Probably Amsterdam, to be honest. Like, it has a different vibe than Sardinia because Sardinia you go to for straight up like vacation. You know, it's rocky beaches, beautiful views. You want to get a boat and just like lay on the beach. But for city life, Amsterdam was like so fucking beautiful, cool people, cool style, great food. It's just like my kind of city for stimulation.
Yeah.
You know, like one's for stimulation, one's for just chilling.
Just relaxing and like getting a tan.
Getting a fucking tan, which I take very seriously.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Are there hot guys in Sardinia?
Great fucking question. No, I don't think I noticed a single hot guy.
Really?
On the entire island. Yeah.
Damn. Where were the hottest guys?
Or the hottest guys people? Are always in Paris.
Okay.
The hottest people are, but it's my style. Like my friend jokes, like I like greaseballs. Like I like guys that have like thick hair with like a leather jacket and like, I don't know, like high waisted jeans and Converse. And that's Paris. They've mm-hmm. all got sick style. You know, like Amsterdam, I feel like they're, I don't like blonde guys.
Okay. Yeah. Me neither.
Paris has a lot of dark haired men mm-hmm. with like those strong Roman noses and like beautiful jaws.
Yeah. That's what I like. Like I like okay. a Greek guy.
Oh yeah. Yeah. You'd like Paris. They all have that look.
Okay. I need to like keep an eye out next time Let's I'm traveling together. Internationally. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, you do. Yeah. Paris has, but actually the hottest guys I've ever seen, I think are in Portugal.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, good yeah. to know.
Very good to know.
I'm taking notes. Wait, because I really wanted to go to Sicily because I'm a huge Sopranos head, like, and Love got it. Into it early this year. And then I was like, I need to go to the motherland.
The motherland.
And, yeah. like, meet some, like, Italian guy. But maybe Italian guys aren't really where it's at after
no,
all.
No, they are. Okay, we could discuss this for an hour alone. the thing is, Paris has the prettiest guys. But they're not the guys you actually fucking want to chill with. Mm-hmm. They're elite. They think they're so fucking cool. Like, you don't want to. Like, Parisian guys are just pretty to fucking look at. Italians yeah. are where it's at. Italians are fun and they're sexual and loving and like free with love. Parisian guys are like, I don't know. They're a little bit like that too, but they're smug. Mm-hmm. Italians aren't smug.
Yeah, I don't like smug. I need like someone that wants to loll.
Okay, that's Italians.
And like be silly.
And Greeks.
Yeah.
Italians and Greeks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, Mediterranean. And keeping it Mediterranean.
Yeah, yeah, the south.
Because
yeah.
I think that Parisian women are the hottest
because
they just do nothing yet yeah. look like how yeah. every American Instagram girl wants to look.
To look. Yeah.
So that is very sexy to me.
They're so fucking hot, the women there.
Yeah.
But the people are really just genuinely not open and friendly.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're not. Like,
it's insular.
It's extremely insular. Actually, this is something interesting to talk about. My friend James, who's a Brit, who moved to Paris 7 years ago. So he's, you know, he's like acclimated. He said that, oh, fuck, I feel like I'm going to forget this. Parisians are like, hold on. Like Parisians are like a coconut. Maybe I'm reversing it. Something like hard to crack, really, really hard to get in. But then once you get in, it's sweet.
Delicious.
And there's
yeah.
delicious meat in there.
Mm-hmm.
And then like Americans are like a peach because on the outside, they're like, oh, I'm so friendly. I'm so fun and juicy. But inside, they're hardcore pits. Like there's just nothing in there because he said that. In Paris, everybody notices that Americans are always like so friendly and being like, yeah, come to my place. Yeah, let's get drinks. And then never actually mean it.
Mm-hmm.
So they're like a peach because the outside like seems juicy, but there's darkness on the inside.
Okay. I love that analogy.
yeah.
yeah. The only time or the times I've been to Paris and when I've been around like French people, I feel very stupid because they're Same. All speaking French and I don't speak French,
yeah,
though
yeah.
I understand like some words, but not when you're speaking fast. And so
not.
Then I'm just like, wow, they think I'm an idiot. And like,
oh,
they're going to act like I don't exist, which I kind of love because it's
right.
like so over the top mean. And if like a foreign person's doing it, it's like, okay, that's
it's
exciting.
Almost funny. It's
yeah.
almost funny how much they hate us as mm-hmm. Americans.
Yeah.
And I'm exactly the same way. I don't speak French. And also my personality, I was saying this to James, I love it because it's like comedy to me. My personality is the polar opposite of Parisians because I'm like hapless and like, oh, sorry. Oops, didn't mean to. Like I bump into people. I'm like, oh my God, my bad. And the Parisians just stare at me like I'm going to fucking kill you.
Like, yeah, Parisians they're like, who is this
My
girl?
Personality. Yeah. Yeah.
So wait, did you go to Paris recently?
Yeah.
I feel like you were in Paris recently.
I go to Paris every summer.
Okay. Love that for
yeah.
you.
I go to Paris every summer because I liken Paris to my college experience, which is that I hated the people,
mm-hmm.
but I loved the place.
Yeah.
So
where'd you go to college?
Dartmouth.
Oh, okay.
Fucking gorgeous institution, gorgeous place, awful people. Mm-hmm. And so my relationship with Dartmouth is between me and the place, not the people. And that's how it is with Paris. Like the place itself, the architecture, the way it looks, the feel, the sky, the lights, the river, that's my love affair with it. It's not the people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's so beautiful there.
Yeah.
I really want to take Tony there and then sit at my dog and then sit at a cafe, just like the two of us staring at each other over like a table of beef tartare.
Allow me to come and I'll be your photographer.
okay.
Like I'll just like
you can document the whole
great.
Thing and
great.
Then I'll start a really annoying style blog.
Perfect. pugs in Paris are like a charming sight. You're onto something there. And
well, I know that like I would be, he's my way of getting accepted. Now I've realized like when you have a cute dog and especially like a pug puppy, people will make a lot of exceptions for you that they won't make otherwise.
Facts.
So Paris, like this is my way to crack the evil Parisian coconut people.
Yes, it's and your entree to the coconut.
They'll open up to me via Tony.
They 100% will.
I got this dog just to use him and like leverage him for various things.
Perfect. Yeah. You might want to get him over there while he's young because he's going to grow up and nobody likes old things.
Yeah, but pugs always have a certain level of charm. Yeah, like if you're a pug lover,
yeah, you're right.
Which I know you are.
Yes, I am.
Like it never gets old.
I'm kind of shocked that you didn't like tell me you had a pug. Like you're like,
I did tell you.
Okay, when?
I said
you did.
I said when I DM'd you. Because and I'm shocked that you didn't pick up on that because I was like, maybe she won't do this podcast or like might be offended that I was asked. But I was like, let me leverage this pug. So I just use him.
I love it
for my own selfish purposes.
I'm sorry I missed that. Yeah. Well, then it shows you that I really wanted to do this for this because I didn't even know a pug was involved. So.
I love that.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. I'm honored. There's a lot that I wrote down on the docket today that we could talk about.
Obsessed.
I feel like we should start with someone I think we're both into, though I'm not as like obviously as you are, but I've seen you comment on her Instagram a lot, Caroline Calloway.
Yeah, that's
she's like now on, like everyone is now getting re-obsessed with her again. Like it goes through waves. It's really interesting to see how people like deal with her.
I agree.
But
I agree.
I'm dying to talk. I could talk about her like all day and I'm so like really into her whole thing.
I could talk about her for 4.5 hours.
How did you come to realize who she was and like get into her journey?
I will gladly tell you.
Okay.
So my followers began sending me links to articles about her in January. I believe it was January. It may have been February.
During her scam?
Yes.
Like her viral scam thing?
Yes.
Okay.
And I have been meaning to talk about this on my own Instagram page because there were several people who I believe were sending me information about her thinking I'd hate her because I talk a lot about privileged white women.
Yeah.
And I think people thought I was going to hate her.
Mm-hmm.
And I clicked to the articles and began reading about her and was like, what the fuck is this shit? Why do people hate her? I don't understand where the issue is. It's like people making a mountain out of a molehill. I'm genuinely confused, and she reminded me a lot of me.
Yeah.
And I called my best friend Kate and I told her, there's this woman that everyone hates on the internet and I think people think I'm supposed to hate her, and I see myself in her, and like I can see a bunch of people doing that about me. Like I feel like I've walked in her shoes.
Yeah. I feel like you guys have similar like
trajectories
and like responses that people get to you, because I was doing a little bit of like Reddit research recently, which is like a spot where both of you are blown up and like shit on.
I know.
And it's shot like,
I know.
I think Reddit is like where all the biggest babes go to just like babe the fuck out.
I think you're correct.
But it's also like, it's interesting to see how like people just light up about certain people on there. And you guys are often like now grouped into the same thing with like lots of other bloggers I've never heard of and like don't have the time to go figure out who they are.
Yes.
But that's just really interesting to me.
The way you said that could not have been more perfect when you said that the two of us get the same response in people. Like people react to us the same way.
People get really angry.
Very.
And like, I'm trying to pinpoint
why
I know that you talk a lot about this and have like your takes on it and stuff, and obviously you would because you're you,
right?
And like
right
your and experience
exactly.
But like as an outsider, like I knew about Caroline back when she was writing, like when she first started and was at Cambridge, because we shared the same book agent and he had told me about her. And then I went to her Instagram and saw these long captions and I was like, whoa, she's like a total, like she's like babe because of these long captions. But it was also really an interesting way to like tell a story that was kind of new and like not a lot of people were doing it.
Correct.
And then I kind of just like forgot about her. And then that viral scam happened. And I was like, kind of tune back in for just like the spectacle of it all. But then I stuck around and I was like, wait, I actually like love her.
I'm
like,
obsessed with her.
She's reclaiming all and like all the scam narrative and stuff. And then had this whole, like, she went away on social media and now is back with a vengeance. And I kind of love that
I'm obsessed.
Story for her.
I couldn't agree more.
Because it's like, I think part of it, I think, is jealousy. Like, my initial, it's like, who is this beautiful, like, 18-year-old that's getting all this attention and she's like writing about seemingly like basic romance, whatever. And like, it's easy to be older and like a hater on that kind of stuff. But then, I don't know, I felt like inspired by it because I often don't post that much on social media, and I'm like very, have a lot of anxiety about posting. And my biggest worry is that someone would look at my social media and be like, oh my God, like, what is she going through? Uh-huh. So then I've erred on the side of just like keeping it really close to the vest.
Sure.
Not that I necessarily think like I want to be doing that, but it's like a fear. And
a fear. Everyone has it.
Yeah. And I just like that she is like, fuck that. Like, I'm not doing it anymore.
She is braver than me. Like, I thought I was vulnerable in the shit that I talk about, and then I see her captions and I'm like, damn. And I love nothing more than being inspired by people younger than me. I think that's cool as fuck. Like, when I see a 23-year-old braver than me, I'm like, fuck, that's awesome. Like, I, you know, like, I'm 33 and you're more vulnerable than me. And like, it, I, because I think that a lot of people think that the way life goes is like, you necessarily, somebody older is automatically more wise than somebody younger.
Yeah.
And obviously we gain more knowledge and like strength and insight with more experience. But there are some people that, I don't know, for due to their life experience, they just have the wisdom of like a 50-year-old at age like 20. And so I always think it's awesome when my role models aren't necessarily all older than me, but are younger than me. I'm like, do your thing, bad bitch. Like, I fucking love seeing a 27-year-old be so brave. And I mean, I have so much to say about why I think she has such a polarizing reaction in people. But I think that like a lot of it has to do with women getting money in non-traditional ways in the same way that people have issues with like sex work.
Mm-hmm.
I think that like people just cannot handle the fact that fans actually want to pay $165 to come hang out with her and like put flowers in mason jars and like eat salad. Like, I think so many people feel fury and rage that someone has the capacity to make money that way. They're like, wait, I'm sitting in an office and Caroline Calloway gets $165 a head for people to come hang out in her apartment for a creativity workshop. And I just want to be like, bitch, host a creativity workshop. Like, fucking do it. Charge $200 and see if a single soul wants to pay that.
Mm-hmm.
I think people are mad at her that people want to pay that.
Yeah.
And I'm like, sorry that you're not compelling enough to have people pay $165 to come meet you. I have so much to say about it.
Yeah. It's like almost like a who do you think you are kind of reaction.
Oh,
but then also that's in the same breath. It's like, okay, well, who do you think you are then?
Someone who clearly people are willing to pay $165 to come see. I mean, who does she think she is? They paid it.
Yeah.
Right? She posted the thing. She dared to post it and it filled up with people willing to pay it. And I think the whole scam thing is a fucking farce. I can't believe
that's the least of our worries when it comes to scamming.
Thank
is
you.
Like Caroline Calloway and her mason jars. Like,
thank you.
No one, like, right. We have way bigger fish to fry.
Give me
the fact
a
that
break.
It's still become like, right. And like still a thing that people are so invested in, like taking her down is
Dude.
Wild. Like the Vice person
Dude.
That bought the ticket. Off
How about
of, like,
the US government? How about you focus on the scam that's the US government? Like, are you fucking kidding me? This bitch hosts a creativity workshop and people they're so mad that she didn't book a venue. Like, I read the Refinery 29 comments on this article she wrote, and everyone's just like she posted the Eventbrite listing for the event before she booked a venue. And I'm just like, and who gives a fuck what she did?
Yeah, I think she was probably managing it, a lot of it herself.
She was.
And it seemed like honest mistakes that you would make if you're trying to do something that's like big, but you just don't know what you're doing.
Dude, I love you for saying that. When I said that I read the articles about her and called my friend and said, I can see people saying this about me, I think I'll tell you why. I think people have an issue with just giving people the benefit of the doubt that they don't have bad intentions. And the reason I said that is because I often do things like that aren't even, that are a fraction of as large as the event that Caroline was trying to host. Mm-hmm. And I find myself in over my head and I'm like, oh fuck. Like I don't have an assistant. I don't have a boyfriend. I live alone. Everything I'm doing is by myself. I'm also working part time to be able to pay my rent and my bills. I have a dog, like all this shit. And I'll host an Instagram sale of clothing because I need money.
Yeah.
And like, I'll be like, okay, I'm ready to do this, whatever. And then I'll make like 100 sales. And then the next day I'm like, the time it's going to take to package all this ship it, all this
shit it out.
I end up going days without shipping it because I know also that my followers don't expect me to be as well-oiled and run of a business as an actual business. They yeah. know I'm just a person, but I'm like, shit, if people were holding me to the same standards as Caroline, I'm a scammer because they're like, they bought a painting from her and it's been 17 days and she hasn't shipped it. I'm like, I've done that with shit that people have bought from me.
I know. I'm like currently doing that right now with someone that like got some stickers from me. So if you're listening, I'm really sorry and they're going to come soon. But exactly. I worry. I think when you are running it all by yourself, and obviously she has a way bigger audience than either of us have. So it's like more under a microscope in that way. Perfectly I think also said. People get mad at like her like romantic, they wistful do. Lifestyle.
Oh, they do.
That she's like just like putting flowers in her hair and like
oh, they're very
being
jealous.
Like a messy witch in her West Village apartment.
A fairy. It literally is a fucking fairy. She like puts orchids in her hair and everybody's like, oh, you think you're such an artist because you stick an orchid in your hair? And you're like, are you mad? Like, do you want to stick an orchid in your hair? Do it. I can't. I just hate people. I really fucking do. They're so mad that she's ethereal and fairy-like.
They're so mad at her.
They're so mad. Dude.
I'm just like really, I'm intrigued by, I guess, women that the internet gets really mad at.
Okay.
And that's like part.
Girl.
Yeah. That's why I'm having you on this
that's
podcast.
Why I'm
I'm just trying to get to the bottom of like why people are so mad at certain women.
It is because they will not apologize or accommodate themselves for others.
Mm-hmm.
I think of Lena Dunham as well. I know she's real problematic.
People are, yeah, that's another one that's like people get so fucking mad.
They and I hate her.
I get it on one level. Like, yeah. I think that some things she does are really annoying and rub me the wrong
sure.
way. But overall, that's another person that I'm kind of coming around to the other side where I'm just like, who cares
Dude,
at the end of the day?
She's,
it's kind of cool what she's managed to do and like carve out a huge space for herself.
She's brilliant. The writing on Girls.
Yeah.
She's talented as fuck.
Yeah.
She's like really, she reminds me of me as well because I see in myself, you know, people that are hated and polarizing. And it's like, she wrote her fucking autobiography and said some shit about like, I don't even know, like touching her younger
sister's. The rocks
sister's.
In her sister's vagina that really upset a lot of people. And I remember reading that and being like, that's weird. But like,
who cares?
Ultimately, I mean, I'm sure her sister okayed her yeah, to write about that.
That's correct.
I'm sure she and her sister have spoken about that. And if it was like a problem, yeah. they discussed it and moved forward. It seems like they're yeah. extremely close.
Yep.
And like, her sister gave the blessing, and it maybe is a funny thing between them. So it's
Dude,
not for anyone else to say, like, you're
is.
A child molester, like, blah, 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 blah,
They'll
blah.
They'll never let it go. On Lena Dunham's social media, on every post, there will be 500 people who are like, oh, you think we expect you to just forget that you're a child molester? Like, people will not let people let go of things. No matter what Caroline does, people are going to comment in 3 years and be like, I haven't forgotten that you're a scammer. Like, people just, I don't know, have no life.
Yeah.
Have no fucking life.
It's really wild to me how much she just like riles people up.
She riles people up, and I will say something else about this.
Yeah.
Okay. No one knows me unless they know me, right? But I actually do think that a certain result of a certain type of childhood is a person that is genuine and authentic in a way that most of the world, and especially those who haven't had a certain type of dysfunctional childhood, never believe is authentic, but actually is deeply authentic, and mm-hmm. they mistrust it because they're so used to actual inauthenticity that they misread authenticity as being inauthenticity. Like they have it all reversed. Bear with me one sec.
No, okay. I'm keeping up. You're keeping up. I'm literally the woman with the like math meme. But then I'm getting.
I love that. That's my favorite meme. That's one of my favorite fucking memes. I use it all the time. But it's like, you know, I had a job at a Nina Bing, and I was myself at that job, and myself is like reminds me of Caroline.
Mm-hmm.
Extremely open, extremely vulnerable, like so nice, so friendly, so willing to help anyone. And people literally don't believe that it's real. Mm-hmm. They think that you have something that you're gunning for. They think that you're manipulating them. And I'm like, no, I literally just am a nice and happy person.
Mm-hmm.
And people don't buy it. Like I think that because there's so many people with like trust issues and they're so used to a world that manipulates so much that they just think it's manipulation, but it's not. And mm-hmm. so it's like, I had this amazing friend at that job, Katya. Shout out Katya. What's up? And she's an artist and she's incredible. And she had a similar type of childhood and she works for Yeezy, which makes sense because like we
love that. I'm like, give her like, please connect us.
Oh,
Yeezys are my truest like crutch in this world. I have four pairs. I buy them like set on like StockX,
as you should.
And I've been like actually weirdly building my credit because I'll buy them and do like Affirm payments, which have helped my credit.
I've wanted to do Affirm for a while.
Oh my god, do Affirm.
My credit's too bad to get approved. I can't.
You can't even get Affirm credit approved
because my credit
was bad. My credit was not good, and now it's like good. And I'm like, this is because I've just bought Yeezys through Affirm and like pay it off and. Time. It's a really, it's a wild way to build the credit, but I highly recommend it.
I'm obsessed with that. I'm going to look into Affirm the minute we're done recording this podcast. But so Katya is amazing. And of course, like she left Anina Bing to go, she worked for Yeezy before, then went to Anina and then went back to Yeezy. But anyways, she was always being like, I love seeing, she understood me, you know, she really got me. And she was always like, I love seeing the way that women react to you because like, they just look at you like they literally don't know if they're being pranked or not because they just like don't believe that you're that nice. And I know that that sounds a certain way to people who like want to judge, but it's true. And it's like I see that in Caroline that like I think people think she's just like fake and they just have it twisted. Like mm-hmm. I see in her a lot of me like open and trusting and like meets people and then is at their chateau in Italy a day later because she is so nice and open that people then open their life to her. So she's always just kind of flitting around from this place to that place and having adventures and experiences and love affairs. And that reminds me of me. And people just don't get people like that. They think that you're like, I don't know. They just think that you're faking it and you're not. But I guess some people just can't ever believe that unless they fix their own trust issues or unless they get to know someone like you. But I don't think there are that many people like us. And I think that's why people are so surprised by us.
Yeah. Well, that's an interesting point because I feel like there's another woman like Kat Marnell is very
yes.
much that way where she's like
yes.
lived a life.
Yeah.
But
she's less hated
and less polarizing.
Much less polarizing.
But I think authentic in a very
yes.
different way.
Yes.
But similar way, if that makes sense. And I don't know if it's like because she has like drug problems that seems cool or
yes.
because it's like she I don't know what
dude,
yeah, I
dude,
don't know what
dude,
makes her so different.
Dude, you're getting at something that I think about a lot. And what that is, you know how you said you're very interested in the women that people love to hate?
Yeah.
Like, okay, me, Caroline, Lena Dunham. I'm very interested in the ones that don't engender hate, like Kat Marnell and Gia Tolentino. I know you saw the book right there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I saw you have her book on your desk. There's a certain type of woman that everybody loves to defend. Like, they're like, you're no Gia. Like, they come to Caroline's and they're like, you'll never be a Kat Marnell. And it's like, what is it about those women that doesn't scare people?
Yeah.
Because me and Caroline scare people. And I haven't identified it yet, but
yeah.
that's something I think about. I don't have a conclusion on it yet, but I'm very interested in the women that, like, haters and trolls will come to tell women like me and Caroline, like, keep dreaming, you'll never be a Gia Tolentino. I'm like, okay, cool, I don't want to be, but also, like, why do people love them?
Yeah.
I don't know. They're less controversial. I don't know why.
But also, well, I don't know about less controversial, but it's just like there's not less polarizing,
less
maybe.
Yeah.
Don't know. I'm intrigued too. Readers, if you have any theories,
yes,
get in touch. babepodcast@gmail.com.
I do think it has something like, I don't know, like there's something, they just strike less nerves. I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know about, cause I've yet to read Gia's book, but I've read like a lot of her articles and stuff. So I can't speak to like this maybe being her vibe, but like, I think maybe putting all your like darkness out there.
Yeah. Makes people hate you?
No, makes people just
like you.
Like you, or it's like you, there's something about Kat where it's like she was able to achieve so much at like a relatively young age, but then she like fucked up a lot of it because she was so fucked up. And it's almost like she doesn't necessarily have the bravado of someone like you who's like, I'm fucking great. I love myself, like blah, blah, blah. Yeah. And I feel like people that can like make people hate other people when you have a really high opinion of yourself and you're like not afraid to say that kind of thing or just like be like out and proud about your own self-love.
Well, I think that that's very true. And I think it's interesting because Caroline talks about her Adderall addiction, and yet that's not good enough for people because they're like, oh, like rich white girl problem. Like you were addicted to Adderall, big whoop. Like that's like a basic addiction. Like no one gives a shit. They write that off. And with me.
And are also still being like, she's high on Adderall still.
Which they do with me too. They think I take Adderall. Mm-hmm. They think I take Coke. I mean, what are we even talking? Who cares what a fucking delusional ass hater thinks? Like, they don't even fucking know us. Like, but yes, people think that I do drugs and I've never even talked about like having drugs. So they're not even referring to like a past addiction and being like, she's not over it. It's like, I've literally just never had an addiction to anything besides maybe shopping.
Yeah.
Which I talk about, but no one gives a shit about a shopping addiction. But like, I don't know. You know what I mean? There's nothing, they want to blame it on something. They want
like find a reason find why a reason. This person is so crazy, but maybe it's just you're fucking crazy and that's it.
Exactly.
And you don't really care.
I don't give a flying fuck.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing is, of course, that's bravado because I'm capable of having my feelings hurt. That's the great, I think that's what my trolls know about me that makes them mad, that they're like, you keep fronting that you don't care, but you do. And it's like, I always try to distinguish between
not because you do react to people's comments.
Yeah, they bother
like,
me.
Yeah, but so on that level, it is like one could argue that you do care.
For sure.
Yeah.
I always distinguish between caring enough to do something differently and just caring, right? Like, of course, like I'm not a robot. So someone being like, fucking ugly slut is going to like fuck with my head a little bit when I get it. But
I cannot imagine someone saying that to me.
Dude, I've had so much fucked up shit said to me.
Yeah.
It's crazy. You really do try to find the comedy in it.
Right? Yeah. I mean, that is like so over the top that it becomes funny.
Yeah.
But like,
someone called me a cum dumpster once.
Yeah. That's cool.
I know. I'm like, yeah, I am. Not anymore. Now I'm in a phase of not wanting men to come inside me. But
yeah,
anyways,
that's fair too.
Exactly.
They have so many other places to come. They can literally come anywhere else. Yeah. Exactly. Like they have a 99% free reign to come wherever, just not inside you.
Exactly.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Wait, speaking of coming inside, this is a really actually terrible transition because I saw online today that there is a Me Too rape kit that's now available for sale.
Right, which, so capitalizing off Me Too.
Yeah, and like...
Yeah, what's new?
It's a true capitalist moment that's like...
That's gross.
Can only serve to make money somehow.
Of course. Well, that's why my instincts didn't like Me Too from the minute it began. I hate people saying shit that's obvious. It's like, of course, good things have come out of it. No doubt.
Yeah.
But I'm suspect of something that tons of white women all do at once. Like, me too. I'm like, I don't know how I feel about this.
Yeah, I think it gave me like a warm, fuzzy feeling at first because it was like...
Women.
Yeah, it's women are just being like... The acknowledgement that, like, we have had a similar experience, and so many women have had a similar experience, that it's like, okay, I'm not alone, which I think is a really important thing to feel, especially if you struggle with any like depression or post-traumatic stress disorder after a sexual assault or sexual harassment or whatever.
Yes, not feeling alone. Well, I'll say something controversial.
Okay, yeah.
I mean, I just never liked the performative aspect of it. That's like, a woman, like, okay, I'm going to get you so in trouble for saying this shit.
I already feel it happening.
No, but it's like, I'm not saying that any of it has ever been okay that women just have to put up with the shit we have to put up with. But, like, I didn't like how extreme people started to be, like, one time, like I'm going to share my Me Too story. And then it's like, on October 3rd, 2009, a male barista... like, looked at my ass. It's like, okay, welcome to the world. Like, we get it. Like, yeah. I don't know. Like, there's levels of abuse and assault, but it's like, there were women who were clearly using it for attention.
I'm sure there's, like, attention aspects to it, but it also creates, I think, even the, like...
You're so diplomatic.
I am diplomatic.
You are. It's great.
Because this is, like, an intense conversation to have, but I'm open to having it.
No.
But it's, like, it just is... becoming like more divisive than it is unifying. Almost.
I actually couldn't agree more with that. And you are so right in that it's a dangerous conversation, which, like, welcome to what I do best, is like create controversial conversations.
Piss people off.
But it's like, it's a dangerous conversation to get into, saying what's bad enough to be upset about, right? Yeah. Like, oh, that's no big deal.
Because that's personal, because it's personal. So-and-so may not like it if someone, like, looked at their ass or, like, made a comment about their tits, but some other woman might be fucking love that and I want that attention.
That's, and it's like that meme that says, that meme or whatever quote that's like, I don't know, nudity empowers some and, I don't know, modesty empowers others. Like, obviously, it's just... up to the person. It's a personal thing, because other people would see a story like this and not think it's performative. But, like, I just think that there's a performative aspect, like performative in a bad way, aka performing to garner sympathy. So not because you have a genuine desire to share your truth and, like, I don't know, get it off your chest, but to share so that people are like, oh my God, I'm so sorry that happened to you. Like, it's a personal judgment call on who's going to think that. But, like, I'm going to give you a quick little example.
Okay.
A quick little example. I was in Paris last summer and I took a bodysuit of mine that, like, it snapped at the crotch and one of the snaps broke. And I took it to a fucking, like, dry cleaner alteration place to fix the snaps. And there was a creepy old man there who was, like, into me. He was literally 90 years old.
Yeah.
Like, legit hunchback, like, practically blind, like, spotted hands, like, bald head, like, an old man, like, obviously grew up in a different era. And he was so fucking creepy and inappropriate and, like, took the bodysuit and smelled the crotch and, like, gave me a wink. And I was like, oh my God. And, like, left the store and was like, Jesus fucking Christ. Obviously, not everyone has to react to experiences the same way, but I'm like, what am I going to fucking do? Get on Instagram and be like, hashtag me too. Today at an alteration store in Paris, a man smelled the crotch. It's like, I just think people are taking it. Personally, I'm just like, there's certain shit that.
Yeah. For you, you're like, that's fucking gross and weird.
And weird. And
but
like
it doesn't.
Yeah.
It's not like a trauma.
Yes. Yes. Well said.
But then also it's like.
I don't know.
Maybe some people do need that kind of, like, sympathy. Yeah. Maybe they do need someone to say, like, I really see you right now. I'm so sorry that happened to you. And that does make them feel better about the whole thing. Or that's, like, what they wanted to hear in the first place.
Well, I mean, certainly, because then we get into, like, pathologies and actual narcissism. And, like, at the end of the day, somebody who needs to do something for, like, sympathy, likes, claps, snaps, all of that stuff. Mm-hmm. Yeah, all like, like,
I mean, isn't everyone kind of doing that on social media anyways? Like, to get, they're doing, yeah, they're saying all sorts of shit or being who, yeah, they project themselves, sure, to be on a platform to get engagement of some sort.
Yeah, no, there is the argument that the entire concept of social media, no matter what you're doing, is to be validated. Mm-hmm. And like, it's human to want to be validated. So yeah, I mean, even people who do things to be told how great they are, well, they're suffering from the fact that their needs weren't met in childhood, and, you know, their mom didn't tell them how great they were, and now for the rest of their life they need to be told,
like, tap dancing, getting applause
and being like, you're great. And yeah, like, I guess that's their journey. That's, yeah, their journey. I think, yeah, I mean, I just have a, like, I know certain people who are clinical narcissists and do everything for attention. So, mm-hmm, then when I see their Me Too stories, I'm like, classic, you know, yeah, like, it's really just, it's, you're not genuine. Like, it's just about you. They want that moment of everyone being like, so brave, so vulnerable. And you're, mm-hmm, like, okay, I don't know, that there's just an aspect to that that I don't like, but, you know, I agree that I think overall it's been good to have a little bit of the tide turned, and, yeah, have men,
though it's like, I don't feel like it super has all that much,
right?
Like,
right.
I don't, like, I don't feel like safer at night, like, no, walking my dog alone, because, like, Me Too has happened.
No, all it's done is make men have a reason to be like, God, women are really baring their teeth these days. It's just made men more the victims. There's all these men, all these white men I know who are like, you, there's this guy, actually, he's a narcissist, no surprise there, but he worked at, like, I don't know, CBS. He was like a friend of a friend from childhood. And anyways, he was like dead fucking serious. And he's like, you should have seen, like, the like CBS cafeteria after Me Too, like, it was staggering, man. Like, men were afraid to even sit with women. And I'm like, oh, poor men. Give me a fucking break. Like, sounds like, rough.
Maybe that has less to do with Me Too and more about, like, Les Moonves being your, like, fucking CEO.
Exactly.
Yeah. And did you watch the Harvey Weinstein documentary that came out? Oh,
my God. I didn't even know there was one. You know what I am always interested in with stuff like this is their kids.
Like Harvey Weinstein's, uh-huh, kids.
Yeah. Like, yeah, how on earth do you go forward in the relationship you have with your biological father when he is Harvey Weinstein? Mm-hmm. I think about this a lot with, I forget her name, but there is a daughter of Roman Polanski, and I like her. I follow her on social media and she seems really cute. And, mm-hmm, it's like, not, people will be like, oh, you're like empathizing with a child molester or whatever, but it's like, she's just a girl who can't help who she was born to and obviously loves her father. Yeah. And then it's like strangers will comment on her social media. Like, it's like Father's Day, you know, and she'll post a picture with Roman Polanski and strangers. That's what I said about people not letting shit go. It's been, mm-hmm, 30 years and strangers will be like, your dad's disgusting child molester. And I'm like, Jesus fucking Christ, man. Like, do you think that's helping? Like, it's her dad. What do you want her to do about it?
Yeah,
you
know? It's not her fault.
What would you do? Like, okay, your dad is fucking, what's his name? Weinstein. And like, what, you know, you never speak to him again. I don't know. I'm interested in shit like that.
Yeah, I don't know how you like separate,
yeah,
your dad from like
what everyone
is, or from his own actions as like a predator.
Yeah.
And like, I don't know if you, in, ooh, that situation, it's hard to do because obviously his actions are now affecting your relationship and he's not thinking, ugh, of you, like his, right, family when he does this, that, kind of stuff. And there, so, was a point, true, in the doc where a woman is like, so Harvey had like, I think, raped one of the, oh, assistants. And this woman who was Bob's assistant at the time was like, I think, talking to him about it. And he was like, I swear on my like family and my kids. And she's like, that's when I knew he was lying, when he said that, because it was like, ew. And I've always thought that people that swear on their family, like, that's a telltale sign, yeah, that they're, yeah, lying. Like, I'm always like, yeah, lies, because, yeah, that happens on Vanderpump Rules a lot. Classic. And then I'm like,
yeah, yeah, yeah. I know your Vanderpump number. People. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. But it's just like,
yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. That would be a really interesting book for one of those girls to write.
I couldn't agree
a daughter
more.
Or son to write.
I just have empathy for them. I really do. I can't imagine, especially because I love my dad a lot, mm-hmm. and I have a really strong relationship with him. And I really think about those daughters. Like, obviously, of course, the victims too. But for whatever reason, I find that a fascinating aspect of situations like this, like the fallout of the familial relationship, right? Mm-hmm. Like the like you were talking about, they weren't thinking about that stuff when they were doing it. And it's like, you know, the Polanski, he did it 30 years before he had this daughter.
Yeah.
So like Weinstein was doing it with live children at home,
with
right?
like
5-year-olds,
like small children, and then like an adult daughter.
Right. Right. Which is like,
but it's
hello.
Also like, what the fuck?
What the fuck? What the fuck? Right.
But obviously, I mean, I think when you're in the moment or like trying, like, a lot of things you're not thinking about when you're trying to like fuck. So
that's quite right.
Yeah.
And I think he has an illness. I mean, I'm not excusing it, but I'm saying like pedophiles or something. Like, I think there's something
like a compulsion,
like a compulsion, something pathological in his brain. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, yeah.
And also like a mental illness around thinking like,
yeah,
that everything, I think he said like everything that I've done with anyone has always been consensual. So he views it as
delusional.
Being like, yeah.
Yeah. So total delusion.
And it's like, no, I feel like people saying no and like crying when you're like going down on them is like not the sign that you like want.
Yeah. No, that's disturbing. Yeah. 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 That's, yeah. He just, I mean, you know, I was thinking as I was driving home the other day, that just got really weird. I was thinking about that classic phrase that everyone says, abuse of power comes as no surprise. Mm-hmm. And it's like, sometimes I hate little cliches like that because they're so stupid. And I'm just like, cool, like, thanks. Like, what the cool, you know, revolutionary thought. But like that one turns over in my head again and again, because I'm like, abuse of power comes as no surprise. And I'm like, it really doesn't, because power is so corrupting that the abuse of it is no surprise. You know, like, he had so much fucking power and money and access to all these beautiful young girls clamoring for their dream careers, and it's just like he just went like off the deep end with madness, you
yeah.
know, with like
took advantage of
took
it.
Advantage for, of course. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Selma Hayek's article in the Times, so I, like I said, I haven't seen that documentary, but that article really hit me.
Yeah.
Did you read that one? Yeah, yeah, that was heavy.
That was
she's a good writer. I mean, that was really, she did a really good job, I think, of saying, because that's how it always is, right? Nobody is pure evil. I don't think. I don't mm-hmm. know. But it's like, she talked about how like there were times that he could just light up a room and make you laugh and, you know, be a funny, down-to-earth person. And then there's that like predator side of him.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's very like, it's never, I mean, with him, it feels pretty black and white at this point. It's like, yeah. you're a fucking like predator and like a psycho. You deserve to pretty much rot in jail for the rest of your life. But in a lot of other situations, it can be more nuanced.
Oh, I mean, even the fucking Ted Bundy shit. I mean, did you see the film they did on Netflix with Zac Efron and Lily Collins?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, it's a film, so it's fucking fictional, but it's like, you know, he was fucking murdering bodies and yet at home making his wife laugh as he spins the baby around.
Yeah.
I mean, people's dimensions are fucking crazy, mm-hmm. you know, like, I don't know. I think about that all the time. Manson, Bundy, just people that like did the most sinister fucked up shit, but then like, there were those that loved them.
Do you watch Mindhunter?
No.
Ugh, that's, I'm like obsessed with the show on Netflix, but they have, it's in season 2 now, and it's these two FBI agents that are discovering like what it means to be a serial killer and like classifying Ooh. What serial killers are in the 60s. Ooh. So they interview all these serial killers and they're kind of like putting together profiles to like make connections on all these murders and crimes that are happening.
Oh my God.
So in season 2, they interview Charles Manson.
Oh my God.
And I was kind of like, oh my God, is this show about to jump the shark? Because we're really like overwhelmed with like Manson content right now.
I'm not.
But it was amazing. And this actor, I don't know who they had play him, but he was like really charming and like engaging and just like sure of himself. Yeah. Obviously he's crazy, but I was like, I get it. Like of why course. People are just like, oh my God, I'm like fascinated with this person.
Okay. I have two things I want to remember to say. Did you even fucking know that he was like 5 feet?
Yeah. They say they're like, watch out for him. He's like a lot shorter than you think he is. Don't stare.
I'm like,
and he's like teeny,
like a little pocket baby friend. Man, yeah. A pocket friend. I'm like, how the fuck were these like, they were crazy, but these like hot, like free love bitches in the 60s, even into him. He's like a little Napoleon dude.
Yeah.
Talk about a Napoleon complex, like deranged with like inferiority, mm-hmm. That takes him as far as he did. But like,
and the ability to like, yeah. They talk a lot about it in the show, but it's like the ability to manipulate these seemingly like educated young people.
Upper middle class women.
Yeah. From like decent family backgrounds and convincing them to like
murder.
Brutally murder people. And then you kind of watch it and you're like, oh, I understand.
Right. I mean.
And I'm like, is he right about some of this stuff? And you're like, wait, am I crazy?
I know what you mean. No, no,
but
dude,
I'm
I know
also
what you
like
mean.
Someone that I'm like super susceptible to that kind of, like, I feel like I would absolutely join a cult.
That's hilarious.
If it was like presented to me back then.
Just in the right way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well.
Like I would be a Source Family girl, like nothing like too creepy.
Sure. For sure. Yeah. 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 The summer of 69 is the year and time in America of which I'm most interested.
Yeah.
I think it was just what a time in our country. I mean, I think that there were just a lot of girls like Leslie Van Houten, those girls who just, I don't know, they wanted something just out there. They just wanted to feel alive. They wanted some kind of stimulation. They were so bored of their upper middle class upbringing.
Yeah. Well, I think it's interesting too, because I read, a book recently by this woman that got in with the Grateful Dead and like toured with them for a lot of the like late 60s and early 70s.
Yeah.
And in her book, she was like, by 1969, like this scene was done. Like everyone, like it really peaked like 67 and then became like this global sensation or like an American sensation, so everyone is like flocking out, but by that time it had peaked and it was like just kind of dark. There's lots of like homeless teens and like people searching for this dream or like promised land that's not actually available to them anymore. And like, that's more being like commodified.
Oh, of course. Just like Me Too.
It's like the Me Too rape kit. It's like, it turns out to be like just like a gross way to like sell people something.
Yeah. That's so, what a beautiful way of saying that. That's kind of depressing. That's like how,
like everything that you read, and it's like everything you read about now or think like this sounds cool. Yeah. It's like by the time you're reading about it, it's already kind of like over. It's evolved into something else. Like,
holy shit.
It's almost like the only good things that are happening are in the moment.
God, that's so true. That's beautifully said. I'm also low key staring at your bookshelf and you have every book that I've ever loved in my life. So I'm falling more in love with you by the minute.
What are your favorite books?
Okay. So, first,
full disclosure, I've not read most of these books.
Okay,
but
fabulous. Well, there's Hollywood's Eve, and Eve Babbitts is my favorite person to ever live.
Oh, love her. Yeah.
And then there's Revolutionary Road, which changed my fucking life.
That movie is incredible.
Oh my God, that movie. Fuck. And there's Hunger by Roxane Gay.
Oh yeah, that one is, I've read that one. It's fucking brutal.
Brutal. Yep. There was another one that I saw, Gypsy, as well as Cherry by Mary Carr.
Oh yeah, Cherry, that's on my list because I'm like working on a book proposal right now. So I'm trying to read like a lot of memoirs and get the sense of them so that I can write my own fucking memoir.
Oh my God, that's fabulous.
Let's do some reader mail.
Great. Oh my God. I'm afraid for you.
Should we take questions?
Yeah, I'm admitting my insecurity and vulnerability, which clearly you're capable of handling because you intentionally desire to speak to controversial people. Mm-hmm. But I'm like, don't be surprised if you get trolled by people being like, don't give this vile woman a platform to spew her hate.
No, I already like realized that I was going to get some of that. And it's like, fine.
Okay, great.
Because you know what? Okay. This is 1 week. And then next week, there will be a whole new podcast. Amen. And the week after that will be a whole new podcast. Amen. So it's just 1 week of your life. If you don't, if you're not into it, you can skip it.
And then we always
come back for more.
Yep, exactly.
Okay. We'll go through some of these. Great. And if they get trolly, we'll skip them.
If they get trolly, don't read them. I have so much anxiety. Yeah. No, it's okay. That shit like fucks me up.
Truly honest question.
For the hyperbolist?
For the hyperbolist. Oh, what is her definition of constructive criticism and genuine inquiry versus internet trolling?
There is no such thing as giving constructive criticism to a stranger.
Okay.
That's the end of the story. All these people always want to hide behind, well, you got to take constructive criticism. I don't know you, so no, I don't. Yeah. Don't ever fucking say a goddamn thing to a stranger.
Unless
period.
You've asked for constructive Unless criticism.
Unless a person has said.
You've opened the forum to say, yes. Give me feedback on XYZ.
Period. Yeah. Unless a person has indicated that they desire to hear your opinion, mm-hmm. It is inappropriate to give it.
I love that. Okay.
Yeah.
On your old blog, you talked about finances, saving, getting out of debt a lot.
Yeah.
Curious when and how
sure.
that changed what you valued with that.
With money and getting out of debt. I
don't know about your money and getting out of debt journey, but I'm always down to talk about that because I've had a similar trials and tribulations when it comes to debt. And,
oh,
like,
for sure. I love that you were chill and open about your credit score being low. And like, yeah, I don't even try
it was
anymore.
Very low. And now I'm like, it's good. Well, I feel like the Equifax one is good because they're just trying to get points for the data breach. But the other one, like the Transferion or whatever it's called,
TransUnion.
Is like still not. As good, like it needs work.
Yeah.
So I'm like, why aren't these matching up?
Right.
What?
Right.
How many more Yeezys do I have to buy?
Right.
I will rise to the challenge.
You know what we can do? I'll Venmo you money for some Yeezys, and you can buy some so that you get more credit.
Oh,
points.
Great! I love that. That's a good plan.
Well, I have to say, I'm not really sure. I'm not sure the meaning of their question because they're saying like. You talked about debt. What changed? I don't know what they mean. Like, nothing changed.
You're still like out of debt or
No, I'm not out of debt.
Did you get into like credit card debt?
So all right, you know what? I'll be real honest here. I have nothing to hide. I don't care. The last amount of debt I got into was maxing out a credit card at $20,000.
Damn.
Yeah, $20,000. And that was like 4 years ago, literally, though. And I just stopped paying on it. And that's it. Period. Mm-hmm. End of story. I stopped paying. They try to call me. I don't pick up the phone.
Yeah.
I literally, like people will call me from a new number and I'll decline immediately. And then they'll send a text and I'll be like, hey, it's like, you know, Susan, I'm like, oh, sorry, didn't pick up, thought you were a debt collector. Like, I just don't answer the phone. I'll repair my credit one day. But
did the card get canceled?
No. Well, I guess it got canceled. It eventually hit the max. And then what happened? Then you stop paying. So then they're like, okay, it's 2 months late. It's 3 months late. It's 4 months late. We're going to have to like punish you if you don't. But the thing is with credit card debt, it's like, literally, they can't do anything. Like, nobody can show up at your house. Nobody can fucking arrest you. They can't, like, take your iPhone away. Like,
always like, because I was in some credit card debt, like, about 5 or 6 years ago. But I was like, what are you going to do? Like, my iPad mini. Like,
no, like, they
good
can't
luck
do-
to you and your journey. I'm like, my car, like, by all means, take it. It doesn't even work. Like,
I'm obsessed with
I don't
you.
Know, like, what else you're going to, like,
they
what
can't.
Can you
no,
do?
The
But mine got canceled, and then I was like, my credit score took a major hit after that.
So I have more to say on this. But basically, they can't do anything, and the only thing they do is threaten to garnish your wages. But I'm like, I left the corporate world, bitch. Come find me. What are you going to do? Like, I get cash for dog sitting. Like, you can't fucking garnish my wages. Like, you don't even know what I'm doing. So, period. But, yeah, I just, when I got fired from my job, all of my priorities were like, my life is now life or death because I just lost my income and I just like stopped paying. I'm like, if it's not my rent, I'm not paying it. Yeah. So I stopped paying my student loans. I only owed like literally 700 to one place and 2000 to another, which is not a lot. Mm-hmm. I had owed 46,000 and I spent a decade paying it off. Mm-hmm. But yeah, when I lost my job, I stopped paying my student loans. I stopped paying on that $20,000 credit card and, that's it. And I said, I don't plan to buy a house anytime soon. I don't plan to move and I don't plan to get an auto loan. So let my credit score plummet. I don't care because mm-hmm. I also feel that credit scores are just another system of trying to manipulate us into fear and all this shit. I'm like, bitch, who needs a fucking credit score? Like I just like rejected that entire system when I left corporate America too. I'm like, fuck a credit score. I don't care. I'll do shit in cash and fuck it. Mm-hmm. So that's where I'm at.
Love that.
Yep.
Okay, we'll go to reader mail now, and cool. We'll save some of these for the bonus episode.
Okay, perfect. That sounds good.
Here's an interesting one.
Sure.
It says, was this friendship really a nightmare, or am I just being a drama queen? Hi, Lara and lovely guest. A year ago, I, quote, broke up with one of my best friends, who I'll call Judy. We'd been best friends for 7 years, starting with the first week of college. A lot of the times we had together were wonderful, and I've never had such a close bond. But mm-hmm. there was a dynamic in place that steadily became worse and worse, especially after we moved in together 3 years ago. Mm. She had her boyfriend, quote, secretly move in at one point, which was obvious since we lived in a railroad apartment and they had to go through my room to get to hers. And they were a terrible couple to live with. She didn't respect my boundaries on many occasions. It got to the point where I was so anxious and upset that it affected me constantly. One positive is that the nightmare living situation bonded our other roommate and me, and we're now close friends who continue to live together. I know there have been times when I was not easy to be friends with. My natural resting state has always been depressed and anxious, and I used to be much more melodramatic and messy. I've gotten a lot of help through therapy and medication and have been stable and even happy for a few years. I'm proud of how far I've come. Every few months when things got really bad with me and Judy, we would have serious conversations/confrontations. She'd listen, apologize, and then we'd be back into the same pattern. I'm not proud of how I acted either. I regressed into passive aggressive with a martyr complex, rolling my eyes, seeing myself as a total victim of the situation. I also have a tendency to overextend myself emotionally. It became a situation where I felt she took advantage of me, but I also let her and in many ways encouraged it. She's told me that she, quote, doesn't do anything unless she benefits from it, unquote, which stuck in my head. My old therapist described it as an empath narcissist relationship. Yeah. I've since switched therapists because he also told me I could be a cult leader and told me to listen to Joe Rogan. But anyways.
Okay.
Judy and I both have trouble letting go of past wrongs and would lord them over each other's heads. 5 years ago, I got blackout drunk and ended up sleeping with the guy she had a huge crush on. Looking back, it was definitely at least a gray area in terms of consent, and she always cited forgiving me for that as a reason I should be easier on her. Another time when I was in a really dark place, I told her I felt suicidal, and she said she was busy because she wanted to spend time with her new boyfriend. I'm not proud that I would bring that up to make her feel guilty in our arguments as well.
Okay.
I've always been, it goes on.
Okay, no, okay.
I've always been more understanding with her because she had a really tough upbringing that seriously affected how she acts and views the world. I finally got the courage to cut off the friendship last summer when she was staying with me, a year after she moved out, and things got bad again. Among other things, she told a bunch of people at a party that I use anal sex as a reward for when men are well behaved. That's fucking a great reward to
you. I fucking love this chick. Fuck Judy, but keep going.
And she called one of my friends a Jew boy. She's always joked about being anti-Semitic. Okay, well, I finally saw that maybe I was acting as a crutch for her, excusing her behavior, giving her someone to lean on to both of our detriment. The thing is, this happened a few months after her grandfather and her dad both died and her boyfriend had just broken up with her. I feel really guilty that I wasn't there for her and that I chose myself over caring for her. Even after I told her that I needed space and couldn't be friends with her, she didn't get it and constantly messaged me on social media, liked and commented on my posts and texted me. Finally blocked because every notification gave me a spike of anxiety and guilt. Mm. The thing is, Judy is a really charming, charismatic person who's fun to be around socially.
Judy's a narcissist. Yeah. Keep going.
Most of our other friends from college moved to another city, so they didn't see the way our friendship devolved and only saw the fun side of her. I felt crazy trying to explain the situation. It seemed like friends didn't didn't believe me or thought I was exaggerating slash being dramatic. My friends who live in our city and saw everything that happened said that I made the right choice ending the friendship. But a year later, some of them had said they think I'll be friends with her again and are wondering when I'll be able to get over it and repair our friendship. I've seen her a few times at parties where I'm polite but visibly uncomfortable. She's pulled me aside to try and talk and say she loves and misses me, but I end up getting upset, teary, and unable to express myself. She says she's in therapy and working on herself, but because we've gone through this so many times before, I have trouble believing that she's changed. I'm worried that if we reconnect, I'll regress and become a worse version of myself too. At the same time, I really do miss her and I hope she's doing better. I guess what I'm asking for is a dose of reality. Am I being dramatic or ridiculous? Is this the kind of friendship worth repairing or returning to? Did I make the right choice? Can people change? Sorry for the very long letter. I appreciate any advice you can give me.
Love, oh, girl, I got advice.
I think you're doing the right thing, and I think you need to cut off contact further and just, like, stay far away. Amen. And work on in therapy.
Amen.
Why you're drawn to this relationship.
Couldn't agree more. Very, very simply said. It sounds wildly unhealthy. Now, I'm not judging you. You don't, that's not, that's, everybody has wildly unhealthy dynamics,
yeah.
But you got to stop. Like that it's, you asked for a dose of reality. Like, yeah. You know, I'm like a Gary V. Like, I'll get fucking real with people, especially because she's like, tell me, am I being dramatic? Am I being ridiculous? You clearly are prepared to hear. Yeah, like there's clearly some pain and there's a wound there that, like you said, it is making you so drawn to Judy. But like the sheer fact, like look at the length of your letter. Look at how much there is to say, like constant drama. Like there's this, there's that. And then there's a year ago at a party, she said this. And then the anal sex. And there's just like a friendship is not supposed to have that many anecdotes of drama. And what'd you say?
Ups and downs.
Like
roller coaster, which probably is part of why it feels so exciting to be friends with this person. But at the same time, is like the biggest, I think the biggest way to gauge if you're in a healthy friendship is like to really ask yourself, honestly, how do I feel when I'm around this person? Do I feel like a bad version of myself?
Amen.
Do I feel insecure? Do I feel less than? Do I feel angry? Do I resent them?
Amen.
And if you're checking all those boxes, you shouldn't hang out with that person anymore.
Literally, you said that you get a spike of anxiety when Judy likes your photos on Instagram. Judy is toxic for you. And I agree. It may not be easy. It's like a fucking romantic breakup, right? Yeah. You're gonna have to get support in therapy to heal. But this girl does nothing good for you. Mm-hmm. Like it is time to cut the Judy cord, sister.
Yeah. And it's hard because I feel like friendship breakups are something that I think a lot of people go through.
Oh, I've been through one. Yeah.
I think that a lot of the times, like I've been through friendship breakups.
Same.
And I feel it's felt very lonely,
very.
And shameful sometimes because I think that yes. There's this.
Yes.
I've have felt the misconception that like if you're someone that has friendship breakups,
there's something wrong with
an
you.
An unstable person. There's something very wrong with you that you
yes.
can't keep a friend around or
yes.
like blah blah blah. And so it feels like really shameful. It's like, oh my God, I'm here again. Like, what's wrong with
oh
me?
Oh my God, I love you.
And I don't think that that's true.
It's
I think
not.
That those relationships are just as important as a romantic relationship. And sometimes if you're repeating a pattern of
yes.
being drawn to like the wrong people over and over, you're going to have friendship breakups. And that's something that a lot of people go through that's like not talked about enough.
I could not possibly agree more and feel like a deep connection to you right now in saying that because especially if you've had a narc parent. I had a mom who constantly made me think there was something wrong with me and constantly made me think that if I ever had a friend, I was the lucky one because I'm so difficult to put up with. So
mm-hmm.
like I approached friendships for so long, like I was the tap dancing jester monkey that was like keeping the friend. And if anyone dropped anyone, it would be them dropping me. My mom used a lot of language like, oh, Sarah didn't drop you, did she? And I'd be like, why am I droppable? You know, like
yeah.
I had a parent sort
or
of
even
like
putting that seed in your head of like,
yes.
is someone going to drop me?
Yes.
Would she drop me?
Total insecurity.
Yeah.
Total insecurity, right? But my therapist and like a lot of the most conscious friends I've known say that if you're a person who's elevating in your life, you're actually probably going to have quite a few friendship losses. They may not be dramatic breakups, but if you are a person who works on yourself, grows, and goes to therapy, you're going to leave people behind because you're healing and they're not, right? If someone isn't healing at the same rate that you are in the world, you're going to get to a place where you realize, oh, I was drawn to this friend when I was a little less healthy, and now I'm healthier and our dynamic isn't working anymore, right? And so I think a lot of times as women, we internalize that if a friendship is ending, it means there's something wrong with us, but sometimes it means there's something right with us and that we're actually just becoming more awake and conscious to something like she articulated, like, oh, I was attracting a friend that like we had the dynamic where I was kind of the one down and they were kind of like acting like I'm their pet. And then you get healthier and you're like, wait, I'm not anybody's pet. I don't want to be in a friendship where I'm a pet.
Yeah.
And then you kind of realize that that's not working, but you still question if that means that there's something wrong with you. Am I making sense? You know what
I'm saying? Yeah, you're making a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that also is interesting, like tying back to like a Caroline Calloway conversation, like what all is happening with like the Natalie. Which,
dude,
I have conflicted feelings about. Okay. Like I see it from both sides, right? Like it's like, obviously it's a traumatic thing to go through a period of your life where you're like fucked up and you're being like fucked up and hurting people and you feel really guilty and bad about that. And then you still have a lot of love for this person.
Yeah.
And like, you want to express that somehow.
Yeah.
But on the other side, I'm like, damn, bitch, like let this girl live and like write her thing.
Right.
Like,
I know what you mean.
She
probably
doesn't want you to be like blowing up her spot like this, even though it probably will get her more clicks because now everyone's like chomping at the bit. But it's also like,
I know.
Are you making her moment your moment?
Yeah.
And like, I know. Where's the line?
Where is the line?
But also it's like, it's interesting to see someone deal with that real time.
Oh, I mean, it's really scary to have someone use their voice to talk about you because you're like, I don't have control of that narrative. Mm-hmm. Like, if someone just thinks that I'm a mess and they're going to come out with an expose, like, Alina Gonzalez, it's like, oh, fuck, that's so scary, right? Yeah. But
and you want to get ahead of it and be like, I'm sorry, I know I'm the worst, and like, blah, 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 and like, I get it.
Yes.
Like, trust me, I understand.
Yeah. But I totally get it, too. I don't know. We're not.
It's like, it's multifaceted. It's not like, it's not just like, God, like, shut up. Like, it's way more interesting and juicy than that.
Very, very nuanced. Yeah. I mean, it is kind of like, oh shit, now you've like put us all on watch. We're all waiting for the Natalie story. Like, I don't know.
I'm dying for the Natalie story.
I know. Yeah. I went to the
like,
cut
I
today.
Wish that I could get, I need to like actually set a Google alert so that when it comes out, like it's straight to my inbox so that I can read whatever the fuck Natalie has to say. Like, I'm dead for it.
My friend Jolie, who's actually, do you know Becoming Jolie? She's another hated
familiar.
One.
Okay.
People hate her.
I think I saw
her
like name mentioned on like a Reddit thing.
Okay, yeah. That doesn't surprise me. Yeah. A lot of people hate her too. But I like her. And we've been texting about it, and she texted me like and is just like, when the fuck is the Natalie article gonna come out?
I need it.
I know.
We deserve this.
Give
it to us.
Come on, Natalie.
I hope that it's on Monday. Like,
oh my God, I can't wait.
I'm adding it to like my reasons to live list because I'm like, I won't end it until this Natalie.
Right. Get through the weekend.
Yeah. Get through the weekend. We all have something to live for. At least until the Natalie thing is out. And then we'll just reassess and reevaluate. Yes.
Amen.
But yeah, stay away from this friend.
Stay away from this friend. Judy is all kinds of damage, dude. And that's fine. We love damaged people, but you cannot keep compromising. I mean, it's not doing good for you.
No.
It's not doing good
for you. It's not doing good for you. And maybe there will be a day where you can re-enter this friendship on totally different terms.
Neutral terms.
Yeah. Or just have it be like, you guys are friendly with each other and chill.
Yeah.
but like you're yeah. not as close as you were, and that's fine. You don't feel like a loss yeah. for that. Yeah. But like,
yeah.
that ain't now. Amen. And right now it's like, if it's making you feel this bad, it's like,
it's making you feel stressed enough to write this response. Like, no friendship should make you feel uneasy. Yeah. A friendship shouldn't make you feel uneasy. Mm-mm. It's not, you know, when I was less healthy, when I had more healing and growth to do, I had some friendships like that. And now I'm just like, every single friend makes me feel nothing but loved, happy, accepted, and free to be my max self.
Yeah.
That's how every friendship should be, you know, and you got to elevate and cut the people out that aren't like contributing to that cause. Like, people should love you and accept you. And if your friend makes you feel anxious, if them liking your goddamn Instagram photo gives you a spike of anxiety, like, that bitch is not good for you.
Yeah. It's time to block.
Time to block. Time to block.
Spiritually, physically, yes. Energetically. Phonely, energetically. Yes.
Block that.
Go to goop.com. Get some psychic vampire repellent.
Yes.
It's like $30 well spent.
Oh,
spray
perfect.
It all around yourself.
Perfect. And then, Goop is selling psychic vampire repellent.
Yeah. Oh, you better believe I bought it. Some.
Oh, okay. Sick. Yeah. Can I use
it's
some?
In the bathroom.
Okay,
if
great.
You
I'll
use
yeah, yeah.
it.
I'm yeah. going to go up and spray some. Also, I'm laughing because you seem like a person who literally does not give a fuck, which I love. And like, my ass has been like grinding on your couch this entire
That's
time.
That's fine. Yeah. I was like, if you're comfortable, yeah. I'm comfortable.
Yo, you saw how much I'm like, this is me getting.
I was like, Alina's skirt has ridden up. She's
ridden
in
up.
Her underwear, I'm just like flinging legs about. But I was like, hey, if that's how she feels like expressing herself, yes. who am I to?
Oh my god, thank you.
I'm like, you do you,
and that's a testament to you because that's how you make me feel.
Okay,
like I'm just like skirt has ridden up. Yeah, thong is on the couch.
You're
like,
comfy.
Yeah,
it's all good.
My haters and trolls are like, can you imagine like if her ass was riding on my couch, I'd get that shit infected or disinfected. That's how they think.
I'm like, your ass on the couch is the least of my worries. Right. There's a lot of dog hair. I'm like, if you feel comfortable with like where
like,
Tony has laid, yeah, then
Wait,
we're good.
Can we take one more moment to appreciate the anal sex part of that comment? Because
yeah,
was
also
hilarious.
That's a great reward system
agreed.
If a man is treating you right
yes.
and you're into anal,
yes.
save it for like it is the ultimate reward.
I
There's
had
nothing wrong with that.
Never had anal sex until my last boyfriend, and he did respect me, and I gave him that prize, and I'll never do it again. And it was a disaster.
Did you not like it?
I have major like hemorrhoid anal issues,
okay.
and it was the worst decision of my life.
Yeah, that was not conducive
I
to like a delightful anal journey.
It was an excruciating pain. I was bleeding. It was a fucking disaster.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, so.
I would maybe say like. Definitely, if you're ever having one of those issues,
yeah.
is not the time to engage in anal play.
No, and see, here's
but when
the thing,
those issues are not
well
active,
but guess what? I'm taking your podcast to Hemorrhoid Talk. There's something about it that feels revolutionary because, like, women don't want to talk about this stuff. But yeah.
oh, I've talked about. I had to
oh,
get
great.
Like
a
I had
a
to
prolapsed
get
hemorrhoid.
No, not no, a what? Prolapsed hemorrhoid. I had to get a fistula,
oh.
like a fistulotomy this
oh
year.
My God, oh my God.
And I've talked about it a lot
oh.
on the podcast.
Oh,
I basically
great.
Like had
oh,
to have
oh.
like anal plastic surgery. But now I'm like, my butthole's better
oh.
than ever.
Oh.
But it wasn't due to any sort of anal sex thing.
Uh-huh.
Not that that would be a bad
no,
thing, but
it
just
be.
Was like, not my story. But yeah, it's like, yeah. I'm all about like
oh, okay.
ass
so,
talk and educating.
So let's do another pod because I've got an anal hemorrhage / hemorrhoid surgery, colorectal. I've got a whole story.
Wow.
So we'll
maybe we'll
that.
Do like a bonus episode
yeah,
about
bonus.
This. We're finding out that we have so much in common.
Yeah, a lot.
Don't you love that?
I love it. I love it.
Thank you so much for being my guest today.
You are so welcome.
I really appreciate you taking the time.
It was an absolute pleasure.
Yeah, the pleasure was all mine. Tell the readers where they can find you.
Okay, sure. You can find me on my Instagram at The Hyperbolist Lives. That is a nod to the fact that my original Instagram account, The Hyperbolist, was deleted by Instagram. So I had to relaunch as The Hyperbolist Lives,
mm-hmm.
You know, resurrected from back from the dead. It's also, I'm 33 this year, so it's my Jesus year.
It's Jesus
I've
year.
I've ascended and risen. Yes,
yeah.
yes, indeed. And I also have a Patreon, which is www.patreon.com/thehyperbolist.
Love it. Yeah. I too have a Patreon. We're going to record a bonus episode now.
Awesome.
For the low, low price of $5 a month, you can get access to this bonus episode and
Love
more.
It.
So head over to patreon.com/babepodcast
awesome.
To get the goods. And yeah, that's
babe,
all I got.
This was amazing.
This was so fun. On to the bonus.
Okay, great.
Love and light. Babe?
Hey y'all, Darius Rucker here. You know, a lot of people ask me, what inspires your music? And one of the big things is a strong sense of place. That's why I love my home state of South Carolina and want to share the awesome things it has to offer. From the beautiful mountains down to the sunny coast, it's got it all. Not to mention two of my personal favorites, great golf and amazing food. Come see why I love this place. Visit discoversouthcarolina.com.